The Word of Mouth podcast from NHPR is made possible with support from you, our subscribers.
And from Heinemann, a provider of resources written by real teachers for real classrooms. Heinemann values teachers as decision makers and students as curious learners. Discover the path to lifelong professional learning at Heinemann.com. Heinemann, dedicated to teachers.
All right. Do you want to launch into this?
Let's launch.
No.
So I want to talk today about an industry that rarely gets a deep dive. This is an industry with $800 billion in annual sales, an industry that employs 14.7 million people, an industry that we all collectively probably visit around 6 times per week. Do you know what I'm talking about?
6 times per week.
The grocery store?
Dunkin' Donuts.
Auntie Henrietta here. Did you know the Common Man family in New Hampshire?
Red Arrow Virgin is just someone that's a virgin to the Red Arrow, and we de-virginize them by
ringing
the bell.
Thanks for joining me for a tour of the Copper Door Restaurant, located in Bedford, New Hampshire. Since 2011,
CCMan.com. Get in here. New Hampshire's Common Man is ready to wow you.
So have either of you ever worked in the service industry, like serving or bartending?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked at a family-run restaurant on Martha's Vineyard in the most touristy of the touristy towns.
Mine was the opposite. I worked in a family-owned pizza parlor in a tiny town of 1,000 people in the mountains.
Oh, wow.
So when we talk about the service industry, I feel like the one thing we often leave out are the people that work in it, not necessarily like the celebrity chefs or this new menu items or whatever the food trend is. So I went all over the state and I talked to waitstaff. And I wanted to know what they like about the industry, what are the challenges, and why they do it. Here's a woman I talked to named Emily.
I mean, like, that's like the thing about serving is, you know, it is like quick cash, and it's cash in your pocket that night.
So Emily asked us to use only her first name, and you'll understand why soon.
I mean, I have a degree, but like, I don't need it to work here, and it pays more than what I could do with my undergrad degree, which is why I'm in grad school now. But that's just kind of like the reality of the situation. So I've been in this industry for so long.
So, did you guys make good money when you were in the industry?
Yeah, I made insanely good money. Probably more money than I make today.
Oh, no. Yeah. People would literally leave me pennies. I was so bad at it.
Oh, man.
So, I think that's it, right? Like, there's, like, this vast experience that people have working in the industry. Like, you can either make great money or sometimes literally pennies. So, I bartended, so I had the state minimum wage, and then I was, on top of that, I had tip money. And that money in our pockets, like, is coming from, for the most part, through those tips, you know, because if you're waitressing or bartending, usually that hourly wage isn't sustaining. And it got me really interested and curious about tips, the culture of tips.
I just think it's really awkward. I really like how now you just hit a button on a computer so you don't have to write it down and do the math.
Right.
And
right. 20% right yeah. There.
I don't know if you had this experience, Jackie, but with me, it was like, tipping was my performance assessment. I mean, I guess that's kind of the idea. But I once had a guy say to me, well, honey, you started 100% and you're only going down from here. So just keep that in mind, okay? And it was always like, it was always men using the tipping principle to exert their power over me as a waitress. It was totally disgusting.
And I think that's where we're going to pick this up from, because when it comes to tipping, that's the side that we don't talk about. And that's the side that showed itself on the red carpet about a year ago.
Well, Time's Up is a movement that was created by women in the entertainment industry.
So this is from last year's Golden Globes, and that's around the start of the Time's Up movement.
All industries, the restaurant business.
And it was that night, 8 actresses showed up with 8 activists as their guest. I don't know if you remember this, but Parks and Rec star Amy Poehler, who'd worked years in restaurants, showed up with a woman named Saru Jayaraman. Now, Jayaraman is a lawyer and president of the organization called Restaurant Opportunity Centers United, or ROC United, and we'll be hearing from them later. But they organize for rights and protections for workers. Here she is talking about the connection between tipping and sexual harassment.
And tipping creates a situation in which women, tipped workers and servers are in vast majority women. They have to tolerate all kinds of inappropriate behavior from customers in order to feed their families and tips. And beyond that,
do you remember Emily?
So I was waiting at a table. It was this guy and his wife. And early on in the service, he asked me my name because I don't always say it because sometimes you tell people your name and they use it too much. So he asked me my name and I told him, which Emily. And then every time I came up to the table, he would call me another like generic girl's name. So I came back with their drinks. He's like, thanks, Sarah. And then I come back with their appetizer. He's like, thanks, Jessica. And this went on for pretty much the whole service.
I haven't experienced exactly that, but I've experienced versions of that. It's almost like the couple is screwing with you as a unit, like, because it sounds like his wife or girlfriend was tolerant of that behavior.
It's like he's playing mind games.
So I started doing it back. So I'd come back to the table with a check. I'm like, here you go, Doug. Like, have a good one, Steve. Thanks for coming in, Dave. And his facial expression changed. Like, the tone changed. He thought it was rude. He was getting irritated. So he, like, kind of changed the subject. He was like, so how's, like, your day going so far? Like, is it a good day? And I was like, oh, yeah, like, it's not bad. It's a little slow. It's like, I was kind of hoping it would be busier, but all in all, like, it's fine. And he goes, oh, well, you got 20%, bitch. Like, as he handed me, like, the checkbook.
This is Word of Mouth, your questions answered, your state explored. On today's show, we're opening up that checkbook, and we're looking at the true cost of eating out, specifically tipping. What type of culture does tipping create? And what, if anything, can be done about it? I'm Jimmy Gutierrez. I'm here with Hannah McCarthy. Hey, Hannah.
Hey, Jimmy.
And Jackie Halbert. Hey, Jackie.
Hello.
So this is clearly a terrible guest interaction, but it's important that we set the table and connect the dots between tipping and harassment. Because when it comes to the service industry, harassment, specifically sexual harassment, is out of control.
A report out today says nearly 90% of women in restaurant jobs that depend on tips report being bothered at work by some form of sexual harassment.
Five women, all immigrants who worked in low-wage positions, say they were verbally and physically sexually harassed by their supervisors.
Have you experienced it?
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean, oh, yeah?
I mean, yes. I mean,
the best waitresses are the ones who flirt with men, okay?
Trade magazines from the 80s and 90s told waitstaff that to increase their tips, they should dress sexier, open their blouses more, and touch male customers. This harassment we're talking about has been internalized for decades.
My name is Katie. I've been in the industry since I was 14. I mean, kind of on and off, restaurant to retail, and then back to restaurant.
Katie also asked us not to use her full name. She's been working in restaurants for 25 years and currently works in higher-end dining. She says it's tough knowing where to draw the line in an industry where the customer is always right.
I feel like it's that entitlement that people just feel like they can treat someone that way in the restaurant industry. And I feel like you're expected to kind of put on a show for the guest and be part of their experience for them to enjoy their experience. But then on the flip side of that, you get that sense where they kind of own you.
In tip positions, staff is often paid well under the minimum wage. So diners aren't actually leaving a tip, they're leaving a wage.
The other thing, too, is that I think it's just worth mentioning that $3.24 we're talking about, like, a lot of people don't know, like, we don't even see that. That's not a thing. So it's $0 besides tips.
Yeah, I remember when they would hand out the checks like every other week and all of the wait staff just like rolling their eyes and laughing because it was always just $0. It was so annoying.
Wait, how's that legal?
So restaurants can pay their wait staff under the minimum wage with something called the federal tip credit. In New Hampshire, what that means is that employers can pay tipped employees as little as $3.26 an hour, and that is the lowest of all New England states. But this is not the case everywhere. There are 7 states that pay tipped employees the state's full minimum wages, and that's before tips. Remember Rock United, Jayaraman's organization? Well, they call these 1 fair wage states, and research shows that employees in these 7 states experience half the sexual harassment of waitstaff in other states. 1 fair wage could also empower staff to speak up not just against abuse from customers, but also among coworkers. Here's the late Anthony Bourdain speaking up against the culture of misogyny within restaurants.
What kind of behavior will we accept in our presence? Okay? What will we do about the things that we see, the way that others behave? And how are we going to account for ourselves a week later, a year later, 10 years later, 20 years later, when we have to look in our hearts and say, you know, I saw a lot of ugly behavior and I did nothing. I did nothing.
I can remember being young and I was working a banquet and one of the chefs kept touching my rear end over and over. Every banquet I worked, if I was working, that would happen. And I was working with my stepfather at the time and I could have went and told him, but I didn't because I was young and too afraid to say anything. I think a lot of it goes unsaid. Like it's just part of the industry. It's just how it is.
If these are the worst parts of restaurant culture, where customer tips are actually worker wages, where sexual harassment is an unspoken truth of the job, what changes are available?
You're changing tipping. You're just changing the whole thing. So tell me about that.
Well, we're eliminating tipping in all of our restaurants over the course of 2016.
This is Danny Meyer, possibly the most famous restaurateur in the game. His company, Union Square Hospitality Group, is New York-based, and in the fall of 2015, he made huge waves by switching his restaurants to hospitality included or tip-free.
Here's how it works. A typical check looks like this, with a line for a tip. Without gratuity, restaurant owners charge a markup on the menu, in this case, 20%. That increase goes to the staff. Their hourly rate goes up.
The philosophical reason to eliminate tipping is that it's one of the most demeaning practices in our entire society. If you're on the receiving end of a tip, it means that the person who's tipping you believes that you would not have otherwise been nice to them or given them good service or prompt.
A little over a year ago, a brew pub in Dover tried the same thing. Unfortunately, the restaurant biz is not for the faint of heart, and they closed shop a few months ago. Management told me the closure wasn't because of the tipping policy, but pretty much because they ran out of money.
You had a bunch of success stories?
No. it's kind of like...
Hard truth.
I know. It's like Danny Meyer can get away with this and no one else. This is Kara Stadler. She's a James Beard nominated chef and owner of Bao Bao Dumpling House, Leo and Tao Yun in Portland and Brunswick, Maine. She also believes in the no tip model.
Danny Meyer did it. And I was like, I want to do it. That was pretty much how it was. No, really, like, because I believe in it. This is the problem, is like, I believe in this. I believe in a lot of things that I want to make a reality. Trying to make them reality has been a slow process.
Stadler began no tipping in two of her restaurants in 2016, a year after Meyer's rollout. She said she wanted to address the pay disparities between the front of the house, like servers and bartenders, and back of the house, like cooks and dishwashers, among other things.
There is so much scientific evidence to show that tipping is not right. I mean, like, it's sexist, it's racist, like, there's evidence. There's scientific studies for it. And so it's not the right thing to do. So what do? Do you continue to do the wrong thing or do you do the right thing? And you try to do the right thing.
But even for Danny Meyer, doing the right thing came with a price. Meyer said he lost 40% of his wait staff after the switch. It was too much of a pay cut for them to take. For Stadler, she knew it wouldn't be easy. But for 4 months, she tried to make it work.
We had a huge turnover. We had a hard year. In my sense, like, that's my own fault. I made that choice, and I was ready to deal with the circumstances, and we had to deal with it. But in my mind, it's still, we had to try. We had to try.
She says that her restaurant lost $50,000. And while the same number of customers came through the doors, they couldn't stomach the menu prices and spent less overall. As I was reporting on this story, I talked to dozens and dozens of service workers. I asked them how they would feel about working in a tip-free restaurant. And overall, people were pretty split. But both Emily and Katie, despite what they've experienced, told me there's no way they would work in a tip-free restaurant.
I make more than, say, $15 an hour when I work on the floor. And for us, $15 an hour isn't a living wage for the guests or for my coworkers. It's not.
But the money that Katie makes, as well as employees at Stadler's restaurants, is the exception, not the rule.
My name is Eva Putsova, and I'm Communications Director for Restaurant Opportunities Centers United.
Putsova says she's not surprised staff in fine dining restaurants don't want the system to change. And she attributes this to something called last place aversion. Here's NPR's Laura Sullivan.
No one wants to be in last place. Not on the playground, not on the racetrack, and certainly not on the socioeconomic ladder. And yet when people are near the bottom rung of that ladder, they actively oppose programs that could help the people below them, even if those programs could help them too.
When That's people say that they like the current system, I'm not doubting that they honestly believe that. I think they're not perhaps thinking about all the other situations that other workers are in. And, you know, workers who are barely making the full minimum wage factoring in the tips that they're receiving.
What Putsova is saying is that workers like Katie, while still more prone to harassment, the money they make has moved them comfortably away from workers in low-end greasy spoon diners. But for some people that have been in the restaurant business for a while, the no-tip movement is...
It's ridiculously stupid, and while well-intended, it is short-sighted and displays a fundamental lack of understanding of this industry. If you show me someone who opposes tipping, I will show you someone who has never worked in this industry and who cannot do basic math.
That's State Rep Keith Murphy, and we'll hear that side of the story when word of mouth continues after a short break.
Who is that we heard from right before the break?
That is State Rep Keith Murphy. He sits on the state's labor committee and owns a busy mid-range restaurant called Murphy's Tap Room in Manchester and Bedford.
I've been in the industry since I was 14, and I'm 43, so almost 30 years.
I called up Murphy because of his experience in the business, but he's also got a lot to say about tip-free restaurants.
Well, look, I mean, these people say, well, we need to pay wait staff $15 an hour or something. We need to pay them a non-tipped wage. If you do that and people don't tip, you will be giving every service employee a dramatic pay cut.
Yeah, he said his like servers and bartenders are averaging between $40,000 and $50,000 like a year.
What?
I had an employee last year buy a car with cash, a new car. She walked into a dealership and paid cash. The notion that wait staff is barely getting by because they're minimum wage employees is ludicrous.
Is it ludicrous, though?
Is that normal for full-time wait staff?
No, it's not. According to the state numbers from last year, out of the nearly 2,000 servers that work in the Manchester area, the average wage is under $12 an hour. And that's still higher than the minimum wage, but if you're working full-time, that's an annual salary of $24,000. And according to the living wage calculator put together by MIT, this takes into account food, housing, transportation, and more. $12 an hour is not a living wage, and that is just for a single adult without a child. But let's get back to Keith Murphy. As someone who employs 200 people, I wanted to know, what's his secret sauce? How are his employees making such great money when the majority is barely living?
What makes a good server is anticipating the customer's needs even before they do, and making sure the guest has what they need when the second they need it.
I wanted to put this to your average diner. How do they think about tipping? What makes a difference for them to throw down 15, 20, or even 25%? So what, for you, makes like a good server or bartender?
I can be pretty picky.
Someone who has good energy, good vibe, constantly checks on you but doesn't bother you or rush you.
Maintaining some sort of composure and kind of coolness in tough situations, being able to sort of not get grumpy when you're faced with some grumpy people.
The question was what?
How much do you tip when you go out to eat?
20% minimum, and then above that if it's like really good service or a great meal or, you know, something fun happens, who knows?
I was a waitress, so I get like it's a long night, it's hard work, so a little over 20%, even if things go wrong.
How do you feel about tip-free restaurants? Restaurants where like the service staff is paid, you know, like $15 an hour, and they're not dependent on the tips from customers.
Yeah, so that's like in Europe and some of these other cities around the country.
I know like a lot of restaurants like pool their tips, so the waiters and waitresses that make a lot of money have to share. I don't know how they feel about it. I wouldn't be very happy about it.
It'd be kind of a culture shock because I'm so used to tipping already.
I had another question I wanted to ask that we need to address here. Do you think that like personal biases, the way people like look at gender, race, sexual orientation affects the way that people tip?
I hope not. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we live in 2018 where we're still dealing with those issues every day, so.
Oh, I never thought about that. It doesn't affect the way I tip, so maybe, no, I never really thought about that. It could, I guess.
Well, I know there are bad eggs everywhere, so I'm sure it does.
I asked Murphy what he thought.
I truly don't believe it makes a difference. I did quite well as a male server, and I worked in a number of restaurants in Baltimore City. I did quite well in all of them. People will pay for good service regardless of gender or race.
Murphy doesn't believe that discrimination plays a role in restaurant tipping, but discriminatory practices have been found in other tipping industries as well.
My name is Zach Brewster, and I'm an associate professor of sociology at Wayne State University.
Brewster has been studying race in the service industry for the past 5+ years. He first told me about a study of cab drivers in New Haven, Connecticut.
And this was the first study that I was aware of that actually documented this tipping discrimination. So black taxi cab drivers were tipped less. And then Mike Lynn and some students.
That's Professor Mike Lynn from Cornell University, better known as the tipping expert.
Replicated that in the restaurant industry. And then Mike and I replicated it again and explored that effect further in the Detroit area. And found in that study that, on average, black servers were tipped less. In this
study, they controlled for a number of different variables.
Service quality. So that difference that we observed could not be attributed to differences in customers' perceptions of the quality of service provided by their service.
So basically, it was just racially motivated or ethnically motivated.
Yeah, I mean, that's the outstanding question, is what explains that differential in consumers tipping. But what I can say is that in that study, it could not be attributed to differences in perceptions of service quality.
Okay, so he's saying that all things being equal, restaurant service experience, et cetera, people of color are tipped less.
Exactly.
I would concede that, as I just mentioned, that servers of color tend to make less than their white counterparts. That's the difference that I'm most interested in.
So we're trying to explore the culture of tipping, and part of that story comes from where and how this all got started. Some scholars say it started with the European aristocrat class, and that's where
folks would leave a nominal sum of money to the house servants when they were guests at people's homes, and then it was brought over to the United States from affluent travelers.
Wanting to seem aristocratic, it soon spread to American restaurants, and that's where the history takes a turn. After slavery, most African Americans' only work options were menial at best. One of those jobs, waitstaff. And while there was no federal minimum wage, employers didn't even have to pay their black workers. Instead, they lived off tips from customers, literal pennies. Now, this is by no means an exhaustive history of tipping, but the vestiges are still clearly in place today.
The higher-end restaurants tend to not only be whiter, but they tend to be more males in those serving positions. And then your kind of greasy spoons tend to be dominated by females. And then, of course, the same pattern is observed with regard to race. Many more black and brown people working in lower-end restaurants compared to the upper-end restaurants.
Take-home wages of non-white restaurant workers is 56% less than their white colleagues.
Basically, all restaurants, on average, it is the case that there are not a lot of black and brown folks in the front of the house, that black and brown folks tend to be channeled into back-of-the-house positions. And so within the vast majority of restaurants, there is racial segregation in positions. And then, of course, between restaurants as well, there is racial segregation.
So how do we move on from a tradition linked to exploitative labor, one that most European countries, where all of this started, have largely eliminated? Roughly half our population has at one time or another worked in this industry. And if you have, you still might feel a sense of camaraderie for restaurant workers. When I'm out with family or friends and our food's taking a little while, I tell everyone that the kitchen's probably slammed. If our server leaves our water glasses empty a little too long, I'll say something like, they've probably got a million other things going on, which is usually true. And even though when you're working, it can feel great to open up that checkbook and receive a 25% tip, is it worth the harassment?
I tried to steer my kids away from doing what I do, just because I didn't want them to have to deal with that, especially my daughter.
Once again, this is Katie, the server we heard from earlier.
And she hosted for a little while and didn't like it, so I'm like, that's good. Go, go to college, get your degree, and do something else.
Out of the 600,000 restaurants in the U.S., only 200 of them are tip-free, and only 7 states have passed One Fair Wage, the law that pays waitstaff a full minimum wage. So what does a paradigm shift in this industry look like, if things can even change? Eva Putzova from Rock United believes things can change, and she says the growing number of people changing food culture can also change restaurant culture.
Just like we raised awareness about good ingredients, quality ingredients, even about farm work, like farm to table, you know, responsible sourcing of ingredients, we can raise awareness to include labor, to include people that put food on our tables every night. It can be done.
Consumers understanding, or better yet, caring about the cost of labor is the exact trouble Kara Stadler in Maine went up against.
People don't understand the cost of things. Think about all the products we buy. How many people actually know what products they buy and the labor that's involved? We don't.
Stadler wanted to make no tipping work, and she might still someday. But is it on her as a lone wolf to single-handedly change consumer culture?
Part of why me wanting to own my business was create a company that I was excited and proud of. And, like, that's the right thing. And it's hard. It's really hard.
I recently went out to eat with some old friends, and they're cheap, terrible tippers. And after our meal, as we were all walking out of the restaurant, I circled back to the table to see what kind of tip they left. I ended up throwing down a few more bucks. I felt embarrassed for them, but pretty good about myself. But now, looking back on that situation, maybe I should have asked the restaurant's manager if they knew about the connection between tipping and sexual harassment. Maybe I should ask if they pay the sub-minimum wage, or if they know if their workers are making a living wage. Maybe I should have asked if they know the true cost of tipping. One of the big takeaways from all of this is how workers really do internalize this harassment, right? Like, it's understood on such a deep level just what is tolerable, and it can be borderline humiliating.
I remember that feeling so well, and I would, like, come home at the end of the night hating myself and being so full of rage all summer long, but knowing that, like, if I had said something to one of these guys, I wouldn't have gotten the tip. But if I tolerated it, kept my mouth shut, I mean, it just makes you feel just awful. Yeah, just disgusting.
Like, you're selling yourself for tips. Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I was out, I heard from a few people about this place called Earth Eagle Brewings. It's in Portsmouth. And people told me that they really do a great job of taking care of staff. So I did a little roundtable conversation in their bar with some of their workers. I talked with two of their employees. This is Sarah Bryan. She's the daily ops manager.
Over a decade. I guess I got my first service job when I was 14 years old. And I'm 30, if anybody's curious.
You're not 30.
I'm 29.
You're almost 30. You just turned 29.
God, I'm lying on the radio already.
People are supposed to lie about being younger, not older.
And that is Sheridan Cudworth, the bar and music manager. They've both been in the industry for over 10 years and have seen a little bit of everything. I started off by getting into just how they would feel about a big, seismic change in the tip model. But as far as, like, no tipping establishment goes, what are your thoughts?
It's a controversial topic right now in the restaurant industry, and you can see, you know, depending on what part of the country you're in, the demographics starting to shift and people having the conversation much more often. Not only should we, you know, forego tipping, but is it even right? Is it a moral thing? In the local community, my perspective is that it hasn't quite been done with great success as of yet. You know, people like Kara up at Bao Bao kind of, like, retracting that program, and you know, places like Seventh Settlement kind of retracting their business altogether. I haven't seen it work yet. I don't think for me that means I believe that it doesn't work. I just haven't seen it work here.
Yeah, I think people are going to need to figure out how to do it. I think pooling the whole house could be a good solution in the meantime. I think just in general, trying to bridge the gap between front of house and back of the house earning is of the utmost importance in this community right now, especially around here.
For sure. That's something that is going to be touched on in the story. It's something that's touched on, but I'm curious, like, from your experiences, is there a better way to address that? Or even, like, just the difference in front of the house has cash on them seemingly at all times. Back of the house is getting drinks bought for them, you know, after bar. What kind of dynamic does that create when there is such a big gap between the front and the back?
I think there's, you know, it's an obvious disparity, even in small shops like this one. You see, I mean, we're in a national labor shortage, us in the restaurant industry, and you see people less inclined to actually work in kitchens because they know that it's a very hard, physical, and demanding job that is not compensated fairly. That is the perception. So you see fewer people who want to work in the back of the house, and I've seen restaurants that have very contentious lines between who is in the front of the house and who is in the back of the house. And it can ruin a culture. It can ruin, yeah, I wouldn't say it can ruin a business, because plenty of, I think, dysfunctional businesses operate all the time. But it can make it very challenging to work in an industry that is perceived as fun. Yeah, and I also think, you know, for a restaurant to be successful, everybody does need to be working as a whole. And that, like, collective kind of service in an industry, you know, my tips depend on how the food comes out in the kitchen and when the food comes out and how it's and how consistent it is every time. You know, and I've worked in restaurants where I know the guys on the line are getting paid $12 an hour. They're standing there for 3 hours with tickets hanging off of the printer, a full board, and they can't get to go to the bathroom. They aren't even able to move. You know, and I'm sitting there walking away with like $200, and they're probably making maybe $80 for that shift. And that's, you know, it's kind of disheartening to see, because we're all working together. My money is being made off of their, like, total annihilation sometimes. You know, and I think that moving forward, for morale and for this labor shortage, we need to really be treating the back of the house people a lot better.
Some people that I've talked to for this story, like, if people aren't tipped, like, what is their motivation to work? If they're not thinking about that tip at the end of, like, they're dealing with a customer, what is their motivation to work? And, like, my pushback on that is that they take pride in what they do every day, and, like, they want it to reflect well on the establishment they work on.
And there's a craftsmanship to the profession, regardless of tipping. I think that's I think it's a fascinating argument, and I've heard this one, and I've in my youth even made this argument that the tip-based system fosters a meritocracy, right? That the, you know, the more motivated you are to make good tips, the better your work will be, the harder you'll try, the more personable you can be. You know, and conversely, like you, my pushback on that is it's not always a meritocracy. If you're a woman, you are statistically less likely to be tipped the same as men. If you are a person of color, you're going to make less money. If you are, you know, a person who is arguably less attractive than, you know, bartender A with, like, the cute shirt and, like, the face full of makeup, you're going to make less money. So I would say that the meritocracy argument is a falsehood. I encourage everybody to be the best they can be, and tipping is means to an end. But is it a perfect system? I think if anybody puts any real thought into it, I would say no. But it is about making a living wage, and for now, that is the priority for this establishment with our employees, is to offer them a living wage, and tipping is a part of that.
I personally believe that everyone should have to work at least a year serving the public in some way. Hopefully at, like, an Applebee's type establishment, you know, not necessarily like an Earth Eagle or some spot like this. Like, you have to work your way up, right? Like, you have to go through the ringer. But as far as, like, people that haven't worked in this industry, that don't know what, like, consists of the day in and day out, you know, pre-shift, post-shift, and everything in between, what do you think people don't know that you would like them to know about this job?
It is a hard job. It's a hard job that theoretically anybody could do if they tried hard enough, and I think it is deserving of anybody's respect. You know, and
if you've never worked in the industry, you're not seeing the whole picture. You know, you might walk into a place, you might see dirty tables, you might see like a bartender huffing and puffing, but it is a finely tuned machine in its best iteration and a total debacle in its worst. And I think patience and respect is all that I ask for those of you who have never worked in the industry.
I'm proud to work in this industry. I really love it. And I think people don't necessarily have as much respect for the hard work and knowledge that is demanded of this industry, especially with food and alcohol and pairing and just generally how to talk to people.